Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Under the Radar SFF Books Podcast. I'm your host, Blaze, as always. Thank you so much for joining me wherever you may be listening around the world. And it's time for another author interview. I am pleased to be joined by sci-fi and fantasy author Palmer Pickering. She's the author of Heliotrope, which is a SPFBO number 9 entry, one that I have read and reviewed, and it's an absolute fantastic standalone novel, and we're here to discuss it. Palmer, thank you so much for joining me, and welcome.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
Anytime. The pleasure is all mine. So right off the bat, why don't we start with the entry competition? Can you just walk us through the entry process and how that's been going so far? Are you nervous? Are you excited? And how's the feedback been on this?
Yeah, so for Spiffo 9, yeah, it's... I'm assuming most of your listeners know what it is, but it stands for Self-Published Fantasy Blog Off, which means it's for self-published fantasy authors, and the judges are bloggers or teams of bloggers. And so it's really awesome for indie authors because bloggers by their nature are kind of publicists, right? And so they like to write about what they read. And so, you know, the entrants end up getting exposure, which is really key for indie self-published authors because, you know, we're not traditionally published. We don't have the machine of the industry behind us. So it leaves it to kind of the community to spread awareness of independently published fiction. So it's an awesome community. The entry, so I actually submitted my debut, which was Moondies, which was science fantasy in Spiffo 5, which was 2018/2019. And I think that one took a couple days to fill up. Like they cap it at 300 entrants and it's basically first come, first serve. You have to kind of keep track of when the entry date and time is. It varies every year and it gets announced a little bit in it, you know, a few days in advance, and you kind of have to keep on it to know when that is going to be. And it's based out of the UK. So, you know, you have to understand the time zone differences and all that, obviously. And this year it was at 5 a.m. my time, Pacific time in California. And so I was up at 4:30, you know, because there's a lot of buzz about this contest now among the indie fantasy community. And I knew a bunch of people who are entering. And so anyway, it filled up in 41 minutes, I believe.
Incredible.
Which was incredibly nerve-wracking. Like, I didn't know how long it would take. And so I didn't have, like, all my links ready and stuff. And so I'm, like, in the entry form going, oh, no, you know. It's exciting and it's nerve-wracking. I made it. And I'm been assigned to the Before We Go blog. And this initial phase is where they basically cull the herd. They, the different blogging teams will... it's a 6-month process actually, but at their own timetable, they eliminate books and they enter books into a semifinal round, which is sort of an informal round where they'll, you know, pick maybe, I don't know, 5 to 10 books to put into semifinals. And then if they're a blogging team, then sometimes like multiple people on the team will read all the semifinalists and then they'll kind of pick one finalist. So every group, there's 10 blogging teams, judges, and every blogging team or judge puts forth one finalist. And then the 10 finalists get read by all the bloggers, all the blogging team leads. And then they rank them, they score them based on some criteria, and whoever gets the highest score takes away the prize.
Yeah, it's a great competition. I was actually a judge for the number 7 of this. Okay. So I know the whole process, and it's great to talk to someone on the other side, just getting awesome. Getting the feet wet and seeing all of that. So wonderful. And the book you entered is none other than Heliotrope, a standalone epic fantasy novel, which we will talk about shortly. But why don't we go back to how you started out as a writer? What made you want to go down this path, and maybe what were some of your influences along the way?
Sure. I always wanted to be a writer. I read voraciously as a child, young adult. And I mean, I would read like a book a day, and I'm talking like tomes, you know, the fat ones. And I just would read constantly. And my preferred genre was always fantasy. I mean, I remember as a kid, like an 8 year old, like reading all the witch books that I could find. You know, I basically go to the library and look for anything that said witch on the spine, and I would read them. And, you know, I loved like A Wrinkle in Time. And the first book I recall being in my life was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which my parents would read to us when I was like a toddler. I mean, I was probably pre-verbal. I was probably like two, like I don't think I could really talk yet. And they read it to us multiple times over the years. I loved fantasy books. I loved anything to do with animals. I loved like the Black Beauty series. And I loved like White Fang. And I've been talking about that with Tori Tekken. It's one of her favorite ones. And I started writing young. I started writing 2-minute mysteries. A friend of mine, Carol, we used to read these 2-minute mysteries. It's basically a mystery in like 2 pages. And so we started writing our own 2-minute mysteries. And then I started writing short stories, and I wrote very disturbing short topics as a young adult child, and like drug use and other stuff, rape and stuff, because these things were happening in my environment to people I knew and stuff. And so I would write about them to try to kind of just understand what the heck was going on. And my short stories like scared my readers, like really deeply disturbed my readers, because I was so like, they were so real, I guess. And so that actually scared me away from writing for a while. It was like a mixed thing. I was like, wow, I must be a pretty good writer if I can elicit such strong emotions in my readers. And boy, I'm scaring people, and maybe I shouldn't do this. So I kind of stopped writing for a while, and then I picked it up again like in like college timeframe and started writing novels and stuff. And here I am.
Well, that's very, very interesting. I've read some authors where like when you're reading like a scene or a section, and you just are taken aback by how real and how hurtful some of the scenes are. I mean, I love those types of things, depending on the genre. Like if it's a horror novel, I might turn away because I don't really like horror that much. But you know, it's picker's choice, however you want to do it.
Right.
With that, why don't we talk about your entry into Smith Boat number 9, Heliotrope, standalone epic fantasy novel. Could you give our audience just a brief, like, 2-minute like elevator pitch overview of it, and then we can get into the details?
Sure. It's a standalone adult fantasy, and it's basically about a retired warrior who's a stonemason, and he gets kind of called back into service because a coup happened around him, and he ends up basically adopting a couple of orphans, which is a very big heart connection for him, because during the war, he was away at war and his village was raided, and his wife and 2 little young children, his wife and his daughter were murdered, and his son went missing. And there's a practice in this kingdom where sometimes they would kidnap the young boys of the enemy and take them back to their kingdom to be slaves, basically, or bounty, leverage or whatever. And his son went missing. So one of the orphans he ends up adopting is kidnapped from the enemy. So it's a mirror of what happened to his family. So that's kind of the, I'm leaving out some stuff that's spoilery, but that's kind of the thread, the emotional thread that runs through the whole story. But another part is that, and I know this isn't really a 2-minute, this isn't an elevator pitch. The elevator pitch door would have opened by now and the agent would have left going, this woman doesn't know how to do an elevator pitch. The other part is that Telio, the main character, is, and it's a single point of view book. He's descended from mages. Magic was outlawed. The mages were killed or driven off generations ago, but they used to be kind of like important, powerful figures, and there were royal mages. And part of this, a lot of the story is about uncovering the magic of the mages and just discovering it again. You kind of, as it's close third person or omniscient third person, and you as the reader kind of discover it along with Telio as he kind of picks up clues and stumbles upon pieces. And it's a fun kind of magic discovery experience as well. Plus some blood and gore, sword fighting and stuff occasionally.
That's always a good thing. I don't shy away from that stuff, and this does not disappoint. So let's talk about the main character, Telio, a retired soldier. He is descendant from mages, and he's working in a stonemason for the queen when he's observing basically training, military training, and then he's working on these stone platforms, and he's actually working on a heliotrope. Could you go into how you wanted the whole kind of like structure to center around these heliotropes and how they work into the main scope of the plot and also the setting?
Yeah. So so this is a bit of a spoiler. So if you really hate any spoilers, you can stop or put this on pause for a little bit. But at the very beginning of the book, he's working on a stone mosaic for the queen. And he's working in a yard that kind of courtyard, their palace that used to be where the royal mages lived and practiced. And so the heliotropes are stone circles. And I got the inspiration from them kind of from the Islamic mosaic floors. There's one in particular. I need to post a picture of it. It has the optical illusion of a swirling spiral. The pattern, like you look, like I'll post it and you'll see, you look at it, you're like, oh, that thing is moving. And so that was kind of the, I don't really know how I came up with the heliotropes as the magic, but lots of things. One was I was playing Final Fantasy 14 at the time, and all the boss fights are on these really cool floors, like, you know, arenas basically with really interesting patterns. And you also have like the Wicca stuff with the stars, you know, where you put candles on the points and, you know, so floors, magic circles are kind of a trope, you know, in fantasy. And so I picked that up as one of the foundational magic systems. And it, you end up learning as you go that it does different things. And I'm not going to say what they all are because you'll discover them as you go. But that's one of the primary magic systems that's there. Another one is kind of an elemental magic thing that I won't go into either. But yeah. So there's some teasers for you. I don't know if that satisfied you. We could put everything on mute and like we could really dig into like the stuff, but everyone has read the book who's listening.
No, it was awesome. A nice teaser for everybody. So Telio, he's an older, he's a retired soldier. More or less, like a lot of the fantasy books that we read nowadays, they bring in like teenagers or people in their early 20s, but you went a different route. You wanted to do the older war veteran. What made you want to make this choice in particular? And how did Telio, obviously he goes through a lot of grief and pain, and he's wanting to make right of like evils that have been done, not only to him, but to other people. So why an older main character?
I really plotted out the themes of this story very intentionally. Unlike some of my other work, which is pure like pants or just go with it and see what happens. This one, I specifically said to myself, okay, what is it about books, fiction, fantasy books that hooks readers? Like what gets them really emotionally engaged? And so I looked at Robin Hobb's The Farseer Trilogy, which is one of my favorites. And I said, what was it about? What did Robin Hobb do that made me like just love those books and get hooked? And part of it was Fitz being the unacknowledged heir, if you will, like the bastard son who has all the power, you know, has an intrinsic magical powers, but isn't recognized and is bullied. And because he wasn't born into a legitimate marriage, he, you know, is shunned and not given his due. And he kind of has to work in the shadows to get recognized. And there's something very like guttural about that unfairness that is something that happens throughout civilizations, throughout history. You know, if you're born into the wrong caste or you're born into the wrong tribe or you're, you know, born into an illegitimate union, then, you know, you suffer and how unfair that is. So that was one of the things where Telio is not recognized. Like there's this position in the castle called Master of Arms, and he rightfully should have had it if merit was what chose that role because he was the best warrior in the kingdom, but he was passed over for someone with noble blood, basically. And so that's a source of friction. So anyway, Fitz, and I related to Fitz Farseer as he grew older throughout Realm of the Underlings series, and how he became kind of a mentor. He, aged. And so it's sort of modeled after the older Fitz. And I didn't consciously say, I don't want to do a younger one. I want to do an older one. It just somehow the story blossomed for me. And I really have no idea how, to tell you the truth. But there are some younger, a couple of the side characters or the other main characters are teenagers. And so you have a little bit of that in there. It's just the main character is an older protagonist. And I honestly don't know why I did that.
Well, you have no complaints from me, because I love the Realm of the Underlings. Robin Hobb is one of my favorite authors, and what she did with Fitz throughout the series. She is very cruel to her characters in more ways than one. So it always tears at your heartstrings, but love her to death with all of that. I've always loved reading about older main characters. I feel like that's kind of like a little shifting away from the norms, or offers something a little different to pique my interest, so to speak. And you definitely do that. Because Helotrope is a standalone novel, and you have another sci-fi series that's, I believe it's a trilogy. Could you just go into the construction of a standalone novel, especially a very thick standalone novel, and how you have to tackle this as compared to some of your other works? What are some of the challenges with the standalone, and I guess some of the benefits?
I had a story arc in mind, a beginning, a middle, and an end for Heliotrope. And I specifically didn't want to do a long series because with multiple point of view characters and a super expansive, complex world, because I was doing that already with the Star Children saga, which there's going to be multiple trilogies, at least two. So it's really a series. I'm breaking it into trilogies because it kind of naturally falls into different of the worlds. And I think it's also easier to kind of break it down into smaller pieces. But the Star Children saga is such an overwhelming project for me that I'm like, I need a break. So I really want to just do a one and done kind of deal where it's, a simple, it's a single point of view character. It's a pretty linear plot. The language is pretty simple and inaccessible. It's a pure genre, whereas Star Children saga is a mashup. It's science fantasy, but it even has other subgenres in it, dystopian and some military. There's all sorts of genres in that book, whereas Heliotrope is just pure, it's just fantasy. It's a warrior with a sword and kingdoms with kings and queens, and horses. It's very basic. And so I just really wanted something to take a break for myself and for readers to have an opportunity to just read something that isn't this big embarking on this massive project, right? And so, I wrote to that for that reason. And I tend to write long, so I never go out thinking I'm going to write an 800-page book. It's just that it kind of happened. And, maybe I haven't been very disciplined with my descriptions. Some people dislike the descriptive heavy kind of slice of life nature of both Heliotrope and the Star Children saga. I personally love reading those kinds of books, so that's why I write it. But I'm writing another book that is shorter and doesn't have those qualities as much. I think my craft is getting better. I'm gaining better control of my craft, so I can more intentionally write a certain way for certain reasons. So that's kind of fun to know a little bit more what I'm doing.
Awesome. And would you say, like, in the writing of your other series and Heliotrope, that you are a plotter or a pantser or some combination of both?
I'm definitely both. I really like the pantser kind of intuitive, get in the zone, get in the different part of the brain where your imagination kind of takes over and the characters drive the story and surprise you. That's really, really fun. That's one of the things I love about writing, is kind of being in that alternate state of mind and transferring that mood over to a reader, so you can really, the readers kind of immerse themselves in this kind of magical mood. That's what I go for. I go to kind of entrance the reader is my goal. And but that can end up being quite difficult to wrap up for myself, because it just, that method for me, at least earlier in my writing experience, required tons and tons of rewriting and editing. It just became so much work that now I outline pretty tightly, more just to help myself keep things in bounds and know what to do next, so that there's a structure, and then I can kind of go off into that creative zone within a structure, to save myself going off on just introducing millions of unintended characters and plot subplots and threads that can get quickly out of control. So I do a combination right now.
Awesome. Since you write in both science fiction and fantasy genres, I haven't had too many authors on who write in both genres. Can you just tell our audience and maybe like what the differences are of tackling these two different genres? And is it just a different mindset, or is it like a different feel? Like, how does that work?
It's pretty different. Science fiction requires a certain grounding in fact, in science, right? So there's hard science fiction where it's really completely grounded in fact, and you really have to be an expert in that field to pull it off, because other experts in the field are going to read it, and if it's not true to reality, then it ruins the experience for the reader. And so there's that challenge of having to understand the science behind the fiction, and then knowing how you depart from reality has to be done well. So, you know, there's nonfiction writing, which is, you know, talking about like how to survive on the moon. And then there's Moon Deeds, which is how to survive on the moon. So a lot of my writing, I did heavy research for Moon Deeds on the moon and all aspects of colonizing the moon. And it was really interesting. I love research. And, but I stray off into fantasy for certain things, such as faster than light travel, gravity systems on the moon, which I have, right, which is based in a fantasy element. Faster than light travel, I have two types, which I haven't gotten much into in the series yet, because we haven't really done much besides go to the moon, which is just a quick hop, honestly. It takes like 12 hours to get to the moon, like faster than getting across the country. It's pretty easy to get there if you have enough fuel or enough money. But some of my readers have a problem with suspending belief, or whatever that's called, suspending their belief to shift from science fiction into fantasy. And so some hard science fiction readers hate science fantasy because they don't want to do that shift. They want it to be based in reality. So that's a really tricky line to straddle. And whereas in fantasy, you don't have that. You create the whole world all up and you write all the rules and the readers just buy into it as long as it kind of is consistent. You know, it's part of the fun of it. So it's a different set of rules. I find fantasy much easier to write than science fiction because it doesn't take as much research. Although there's certain things in fantasy I have to research, you know, sword fighting and forging swords and, you know, horse care and all that kind of stuff, you know, medieval villages and stuff, you know, which is another type of research, which also is very fun. But it's a different, you don't have to adhere as much to reality as you do for some science fiction readers. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love the science fiction fantasy genre blender type of approach. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I tend to not like very like hard sci-fi books, because the more like description you talk about like the science behind it, my brain just shuts off. I'm like, I can't follow this. So I tend to like more genre blenders. And probably my favorite science fiction book is Dune, which it's science fiction, but it takes place in like a fantasy world and has all those elements, which I grow to love. So this sounds like a series I would definitely be wanting to pick up. And why don't you tell our audience a little bit about the Star Children saga? What's it about? What are the characters and how you came up with the idea?
Yeah, Dune is definitely one of my favorites as well. And some people have likened the Star Children saga to Dune, more so even in some of the earlier drafts than now, but it has some slight similarities in terms of mood and kind of the arid environment of Dune in a desert, because the moon, Moondeeds is the second two thirds of the book takes place on the moon, and it's basically like a desert there. I actually modeled, this is going off a little bit on a tangent, but I actually modeled the colony. The colony is called, on the moon is called Peary Dome. It's a geodesic glass dome that's up on the North Pole on a peak of a crater, which is called an eternal peaks of light. And this is all factually correct. There's a couple of the south, north and south pole have a peak crater peaks that are perpetually in light. There's this kind of wobble of the moon that keeps the sun on the sort of like in the north of the earth during certain seasons. The sun just kind of rotates around on the horizon and never sets. It's that kind of dynamic. And so they're on this peaks of eternal light. But I modeled the village, the colony on Burning Man. I don't know if any of our readers have gone to Burning Man, but Burning Man, which I've been to several times, is a very flat desert plain in Nevada. It's so flat that you can see the curvature of the earth on it. And they do speed trials for racing cars there as well, because it's so flat. And I guess the surface is good. It's like an alkaline lake bed. It's not really sand or dirt. It's this alkaline clayish kind of stuff, which is really corrosive and harsh, and reminded me of the moonscape, which also has this dust stuff that's this corrosive. There's no plant life. There's dust in the air, which is toxic to you, basically. So the Burning Man camp is built in a circle with concentric rings with spoke roads and ring roads. And that's Peary Dome also is built that way. So for any, just a little tidbit, a little trivia tidbit there. If you look at aerial photographs of the Burning Man camps, that's basically the Peary Dome grid layout, which you'll see also in a map that I included in Light Fighters. But anyway, that was a big transgression for a detail.
It's all good.
But Star Children Saga has short arcs and a long arc. The long arc for the saga, the series, is that we are descended. The theme is that we are descended from an alien species on another planet across the galaxy, who they went off exploring to other planets way back hundreds of thousands of years ago, and they settled various habitable planets. Earth is one place that they settled, but there's other planets where basically we have cousins there. Other humanoids descended from the same ancestors populate other planets. And every 1,000 years, we need to reconnect with our ancestors kind of for like an energy boost or to keep like our DNA intact, to keep our energy up. We have to kind of reconnect with them to kind of remember who we are and reinvigorate our energy bodies. And so there's these pair of twins are born every 1,000 years who have the responsibility of igniting the connection between the home planet and all the other planets through these. They create these paths of light where people can travel on these beams of light sort of to travel between the planets and to travel to the home planet. And it's up to these star children, these twins, to ignite that pathway every 1,000 years. Well, the previous 1,000 years before this book started, there was a war and one of the kind of portal things was destroyed and they never connected. So we've been without that connection now at this point in the story where it starts in 2,000 years. And if we don't connect with our ancestors, we degrade and we basically spiral into this permanent dark age. So it's up to these twins now to figure out how to find the star people who are our ancestors with this like destroyed portal, not knowing, having any really guidelines for how to do it. And if they don't, if they're not successful, then kind of mankind is doomed. So that's the long arc. Like, how are they going to find this lost planet across the galaxy? And the short arc for the Moondeeds trilogy is that Earth has one of our cousins, one of the other planets that was populated, they have developed like a lot of high tech and they travel around on spaceships and they've invaded Earth basically through a kind of soft invasion. They kind of infiltrated the society and now they're taking over and they're converting Earth into their political economy structure, which is basically a world government that enslaves its people in work camps. And so they're taking over Earth. And there's the only thing that Earthlanders, I call them, have figured out that can defend against the superior alien technology is magic. And so our twins, protagonists, Cassidy and Tor, they're descended from shamans. They're from their parents are shamans. They grew up in a community of shamans in Shasta, California, Shasta Mountain, California. And there's a magic kind of elemental shield that's been protecting the West Coast against these TEGs, which is the alien army, alien-backed army. And the shield is fallen. When the story starts, the shield is disintegrating and the TEGs are moving in. There's one place, though, that's still free, and it's the moon. So there's a moon colony. And so the first book is about them trying to flee Earth to go to the moon, to escape this and to protect themselves so they can figure out how to connect with our ancestors to, like, resolve this whole mess.
Oh, that's great. That was very riveting. Something I would actually be very much looking forward to read as soon as my TBR gets down.
Yeah,
off
right.
the mountain that it is.
I think we all have that crazy problem.
Can't help it. There's too many books, not enough time.
I know.
Well, speaking of TBRs, what are you currently reading? Any books that are maybe defined as, quote, under the radar or not a lot of people know about? What's your TBR looking like?
This is interesting. So I'm part of the indie kind of author community. And, you know, I know about a lot of books that kind of my peers have written and past FIFBO, you know, contestants. And so I bought a lot of those books. So I have a huge TBR of indie books, but I'm a very, very picky reader. Like I'll read a chapter or two. And if I'm not hooked, like I love to be addicted to books. Like, so the Robin Hobb series, Elderling series, and the Wheel of Time were two examples of series that I was completely addicted. Like I had to read them, you know, and not many books do that for me. So I'm always looking to recreate that high, right? You know, to get my fix. And if it doesn't like hook me like that, I'm like, you know, that's not a strong enough drug. Let me try the next book, you know? So I'm really bad about that. So I've read the first couple chapters of a lot of books and they're sitting and I'm like, yeah, that could be good, but I'm not hooked. So I'm going to keep looking. So when I'm fine, so I keep switching between trad published books and indie published books. And right now I'm on a couple of trad published books. And one that we chatted about that I just finished was Curse of the Mistwraith, which we can get into with Jenny Wertz. But the one I'm reading now is Jade City, Fonda Lee. Which I'm totally loving. And so it's not under the radar, right? But I've also just started Spiffbo Entrant Phased by Tori Tekken, Victoria Tekken from Tori Talks. I've started that. It's a kind of a werewolf, young adult, paranormal thing. It's good. I'm liking it. So I'm doing that in Jade City. But I did just wrap up Curse of the Mistwraith, which was a project to read that. I have to say, I totally loved it, but it took effort. And so we could talk about any of those.
Well, everyone who follows me know how much I love Jenny Wertz's books. I've had her on many times. Yeah. Curse of the Mistwraith. It is a challenge and it's done that way by design. Jenny and I have spoken about that many times. She's not going to hold your hand. She pulled no punches. She wrote the story that she wanted to write and just bring through the horrible effects of war and what those can have on the people surrounding them, and also about compassion, empathy, and justice, and what your version of that is, depending on which side of the aisle you stand on. So I'm very glad you enjoyed it. But yes, it was a little bit of a trek to get through it, at least the first time. For me as well.
So all the things you mentioned, I totally loved. Like, you know, the last 20% of the book totally made the story for me. She like went for it. And I loved that. Yeah. I mean, look, I write fantasy with swords. And so I like battle. I like the themes of, you know, loyalty and compassion and tribalism and brotherly, you know, familial connections and friction and all that stuff. I thought all that was really well done. The only thing that was difficult for me was not any of the plot or the world building. I loved the magic systems. I loved the world. It was the writing style. Sentences, I would read sentences 2 or 3, 4 times to try to understand them. Because I'm like a word for word reader. I want to like absorb every single word. And I would have to parse these sentences and, you know, often stop and refer to my dictionary and, you know, which was fun because I love learning new words and I like, you know, complex thoughts, but it just took effort. So after a while, I would kind of just accept that I understood 80% of what that paragraph was supposed to mean. And that was good enough. And I keep moving on. Otherwise, it just taking me forever. So that was the area that was, and, you know, that writing style brings a certain mood and brings you into a certain kind of state of mind, which is effective. And I like that. And it kind of places it in a kind of more of the old masters of fantasy writing, which it has a place and it definitely succeeded in, you know, being a certain style. It just, my brain worked, which was good. By the end, I kind of more got used to the style and it was easier going, and I'm sure future books will be easier. So,
yeah, the first time I read it, I agree. It was the writing style and it was the prose that I wasn't used to. It took a good, at least half the book to get the flow of things. And still, I'm in my second reread of the whole series. There's still sections that I'm like, it's slowing me down, but the way Jenny wrote it, it's designed to slow your brain down because it's the little sentences that you're reading that will, and there's no loose threads that she'll throw in there just to throw in something like that. It'll show in further stories, further books in the series. So there's a reason for that. And what she does is she does the buildup and she wants to get you in the mood where she's flipping tropes on their heads all the time. And she wants to just pull the rug out from underneath you at every step of the way. And this slow building, like type of flow, that's what she does. And book 2 in the series is one of my favorites, Ships and Mirror. It's more linear than Curse. I just loved it. I ate it up. So you have a lot to look forward to if you continue with the series, and I hope you do.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of good things about the second book as well. I mean, there's so much of it that I love. I want to learn more about the Enchantresses. I love those side, you know, characters and the lanes, that whole magic system. I love that. I want more of that. The whole bard, you know, subplot persona thing. I love that. You know, I loved all the battles and the magic systems and the world building. And you know, the wizards or whatever they're called. And her books, they're, you know, it was all fabulous, just really masterful world building and magic systems for sure. I did like what she did with the last, like I said, the last 20%, and I'm not being specific for spoilery reasons, but I loved how she just tore everything down basically and went for it. And you could see I could see in retrospect how the buildup, you know, you kind of expecting things to go one way and then it just totally didn't. And I love that. So yeah, I'm excited to read more. I definitely will get to Ships of Marier at some point. So, yeah.
Lovely. Can't wait to hear your feedback. Well, I could talk about Jenny Wirtz and the Curse of Mist Race the whole time, but I know we have a show to do. So this has been wonderful. Could you tell our audience where they can find you, your Twitter handle, maybe your website?
Yeah. So my Twitter handle is Barbara Pickering, except instead of G, it's the number 1, because I guess there's already a Palmer Pickering on Twitter. I don't know. So Palmer Pickering 1. And my website is called mythologypress.com. And those Twitter is the main place where I chit chat with people. I did start a new Facebook page recently under Palmer Pickering, where I have my personal one where I, you know, it's with friends and family, work friends and stuff, which I work in high tech. So it's kind of, that's a different community. And I kind of try to segregate a little bit. And then I had one for Mythology Press, which I didn't really do much with. So now I've got one. So it's Facebook, it's Twitter, Instagram. I'm active a little bit on there. My Instagram handle is Lion Cut Cat. Lion like rah, cut cat. which is a little weird, but yeah. And yeah, so Twitter, you can DM me. I'm on Goodreads. You can catch me there. But let me just jump in just 1 second on the whole slow burn buildup of the Curse of the Mistwraith. Heliotrope also has a very slow burn, slice of life buildup. And all of my books, I do drop very important things in the middle of some random paragraph. Like if you're a skimmer, you're going to miss some key stuff. Like there'll be really important things inserted in the middle of another otherwise innocuous looking scene. So there's a lot of clues along the way and key pieces of information that are scattered around. So when people read my books, they really need to read them. Like you're not going to enjoy it if you just kind of do the power speed read thing, like scan one page in like 10 seconds and move on to the next one, like speed reading where you absorb an entire page in one glance. Like that's not going to work. It's too detail oriented on purpose. So yeah, that's an aside. I don't know if you found that in Heliotrope, but things that are just sort of casually mentioned later, you're like, oh, that's what that is.
Yep, I did pick that up. And Jenny is the same way with her series. So you two are two peas in a pod. And I love them.
Yeah.
Okay, this has been very lovely, Palmer. Thank you so much for joining me. Sorry, hopefully we can do this again sometime.
All right, Blaze. Great, thank you.
Have a good one.
You too.